Welcome to Technology and the Arts, a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll share some interesting news, websites, and online resources we've come across recently, including TuneCore, a service that helps independent musicians get their songs on iTunes and other online music stores, and a recent conference on digital music analysis held at Drexel University in Philadelphia. Plus, we'll discuss a new digital media licensing agreement and the G1 from T-Mobile, the first phone to use Google's Android mobile operating system. We'll talk about all this and more just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Wednesday, September 24th, 2008. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Technology and the Arts podcast. As always, Technology and the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts. My name is Brian Kelly. I'm a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter, musician, and science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey. Normally, I'm joined by my friend and co-host John Lemazny, but we just weren't able to get together to record this week's podcast. Hence, it's just me this time out, so I'll try to keep this short. Before we go into the technology and arts-related discussion, just want to bring up a few personal notes. As I've mentioned in previous podcasts, Heir Apparent, the Main Man Records tribute to 80s hair bands, is available for pre-order from mainmanrecords.com. The CD features a bluegrass version of Twisted Sister's I Wanna Rock, recorded by my friend Christian Beach, who invited me to play accordion on the track. The official release date for the CD keeps changing, and currently is October 7th, but I pre-ordered it a couple of weeks ago and already received my copy. And I have to tell you, there are some really cool tracks on the CD. Killing Phantom's spacey lounge act rendition of Europe's The Final Countdown, and Dan Maxwell and his band's cover of Whitesnake's Here I Go Again are two of my favorite tracks from Heir Apparent. Of course, aside from Christian's cover of I Wanna Rock. But I encourage you to check out the CD at www.mainmanrecords.com. And if you want to listen to some of the tracks, you can go to www.myspace.com/mainmanrocks, and you can hear some of the tracks there. Also, just want to plug a few of Christian Beach's upcoming shows. He will be performing at McShay's Beach Pub and Grill in Dewey Beach, Delaware, as part of the Dewey Beach Music Conference on Saturday, September 27th. And then he will be performing at Triumph Brew Pub in Princeton, New Jersey on October 23rd, and Triumph in Philadelphia on October 29th. So check out www.myspace.com/Christian Beach for details. So now let me take a look at my friend feed profile to see what I want to talk about this week. First up is TuneCore. TuneCore is a service that allows independent musicians, well, basically anybody, to put songs for sale on online digital music stores, such as iTunes, Amazon, eMusic, Rhapsody, among others. So how does it work? TuneCore charges $19.98 a year to store an uploaded album from any artist, and in this case, an album is anything more than one song. It charges an additional 99 cents per song on that album, along with a 99 cent charge for each music store that the artist submits it to, i.e., iTunes, eMusic, Amazon, so on. And those are one-time charges. That's it. For a whole year, let's say you have a 10-song album you want to sell on 3 online music stores. So you get charged the $19.98 a year, about 20 bucks for an album. Say there's 10 songs on it, that's another $10, 99 cents per track. So you're about $30. You want to submit it to 3 stores. Say you want to sell it on iTunes, Amazon, and eMusic. That's about another $3 right there. So for about 33 bucks, you can sell an album on these 3 online music stores for an entire year. And the artist retains all rights and royalties. So it's a very interesting service. And any independent musicians out there, you may want to look into it if you haven't already. So that's TuneCore. But staying on TuneCore for a moment, they actually recently announced that they are going to start accepting movies from independent filmmakers and putting them on iTunes. It's currently in beta, the movie side of the service, and it's supposed to launch publicly in mid-November. But basically, if you're an independent filmmaker, wants to put a movie on iTunes, kind of the same model. You pay an upfront flat fee. You have the work sent out to the digital download store of your choice. And you, again, you retain the royalties and rights. The stores will take their cut. Same thing with the music side of it. But it's really going to open up a distribution channel for independent filmmakers. Of course, we're dealing with more extensive media here in the video world, so the costs are a lot more expensive than on the music side of things. But according to an Ars Technica article, a 60-minute film will cost about $550. And a 90-minute film will cost roughly $770. And right now, iTunes is the only online movie store that is taking part in the beta. But hopefully other online film stores will join in at some point. But again, check out TuneCore. Very interesting stuff. Next, the Digital Media Association recently announced a new agreement with organizations that represent musicians and songwriters that will provide a streamlined licensing procedure to many models of digital music distribution. The new agreement does not apply to download-to-own music, but will apply to streaming services, including subscription and ad-supported music services. Basically, Last.fm, Spiral Frog, things of that nature. The agreement has been submitted to the copyright royalty judges for approval. For the purposes of this agreement, musicians and songwriters were represented by the National Music Publishers Association, the Nashville Songwriters Association International, and the Songwriters Guild of America. They negotiated the deal with the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, and the Digital Media Association, which includes industry heavy hitters like Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft. But the Digital Media Association also includes other companies that are doing less well under the current royalty system, including internet radio services Pandora and Live 65. And services like Pandora and Live 65 apparently were left out of this agreement. So the royalty structure that has been imposed upon internet radio services still stands. It's still a struggle right now. But a Pandora spokesperson told Ars Technica that the company found the agreement an encouraging sign that all sides can talk, but it still doesn't solve the problem of the licensing fees that threaten to destroy internet radio. So hopefully this agreement leads to new discussions between Pandora and other internet radio services and Sound Exchange, the body that oversees royalty collections for digital music. Hopefully there can be more talks. They can use this as a model and try and get something done. But internet radio is still in lots of trouble. So click on the link in the show notes to read all about that from Ars Technica. Next, a recent Philadelphia Inquirer story looked at analyzing music in a digital way. and featured former Technology in the Arts guest Go Wong and the Princeton Laptop Orchestra. The article came about because a 5-day international conference on music information retrieval was recently held at Drexel University in Philly. The annual conference represents the new academic discipline of harnessing the power of computers to analyze and manage the world of sound. So click on the link in the show notes to read more about that. Very fascinating stuff. And finally, want to talk about Google and T-Mobile introducing the first phone based on Google's open source Android mobile operating system. While not as sleek and sexy as Apple's iconic iPhone, the T-Mobile G1, as the phone is called, appears to be a solid starting point for the Android mobile platform. And I'm looking at this first impressions piece on the Yahoo Tech blog, and one of the cooler things that's mentioned is, well, first of all, Google Maps and the Google Docs applications apparently work very well on the G1, which shouldn't surprise anybody. But one of the cool features that's mentioned in this piece is that when you're using Google Maps on your G1 and you switch to Street View and you're on a street that has Street View capability on Google Maps, if you hold the G1 out in front of you, it will show you the street as you're looking at it in Street View. And because there's a built-in compass in the phone, when you turn, the Street View turns with you. And the blog post says that the Street View feature is very fast and responsive and is way, way cool. So can't wait to check out the Android-based phones. I said when it was introduced, when it was first announced that Google was partnering with these companies to produce these Android-based phones, that that might be the phone I wind up with rather than an iPhone. And from what I've seen so far, I think that's probably going to be the case. So anyway, that's it for the technology and arts discussion this week. Here is the technology and the arts events calendar. Here is your technology and the arts events calendar. The Experience Music Project and Science Fiction Museum and Hall of Fame in Seattle, Washington presents Robots, a designer's collection of miniature mechanical marvels, running now through October 26, 2008. This exhibition celebrates the long fascination with humankind's technological version of itself. Inspired by antique tin and wooden toys, samurai warriors, and mid-20th century Japanese film characters, these intricately detailed and beautifully designed miniatures are set against the venue's backdrop of life-size robots, androids, and cyborgs from the world of science fiction, film, and television. For more information, visit www.epmsfm.org. An exhibition titled Just In, Recent Acquisitions from the Collection, takes place at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, now through November 30th, 2008. This installation draws from acquisitions made over the past 2 years by the Department of Architecture and Design, many on display for the first time. The selection represents the diversity found in contemporary design practice with a focus on the latest innovations in architectural, industrial, and graphic design. For more information, visit www.moma.org. To stay informed about these and other events related to technology and the arts, please remember to check out the Technology and the Arts events page at techarts.wordpress.com. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of another Technology and the Arts podcast. Once again, thanks to the magic of digital editing, here is John Lemazny with a reminder to our listeners.
Well, as always, I'd like to say to our listeners that if you have an idea for a story or know about a show or event related to technology and or art, to let us know about it by emailing us at technology.arts@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send an email just to say hi. And you're always welcome to leave a comment on the Technology and the Arts blog at techarts.wordpress.com.
That closes the curtain on another Technology and the Arts podcast. Stay tuned for our next show on Wednesday, October 8th, 2008. Until then, for Technology and the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemazny. Take care.
The views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily those of guests of the program. Conversely, thoughts and opinions expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily shared by the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.